Oddnuts Daily is brought to you by Super Anti Spyware. Remove all the spyware, not just the easy ones, at superantispyware.com. And also the Podnuts Tech Website Builder. Build a Podnuts endorsed computer repair business website today at techsitebuilder.com. Welcome to Podnuts Daily, episode number 269. It's a show about computer repair, and it's a cool show because technicians actually come on the show and they talk about what they're doing as far as computer repairs and getting their website set up and jobs that they're doing and tips and tricks. And I don't have to do nothing. I just sit here and listen. So I quite enjoy this show. And joining us today is a technician calling from Michigan. It's Jeff Hallish, and he's calling from – where are you calling from, Jeff?
St. Clair Shores.
St. Clair Shores. How you doing?
I'm doing real good.
Jeff's website is technutpc.com. He's got a computer repair business up there. And thanks for calling in today, Jeff.
Oh, thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely. So what do you want to talk about?
I guess let's start with, I got some notes. Let's talk about, some business tips, some different things. I started my business actually, let me start from the beginning. I started fixing computers about 11 years ago. And just a lot of family and friends, and I just enjoyed it. How I really got started is I had a Dell, and I remember when I started having some problems with it. One of the things I did was I would wait till about 2 o'clock in the morning, and this was when Dell support was still in Texas, and I'd call a technician out there, and they'd be bored to tears, so they'd sit there and talk to me. And when we'd solve a problem, I'd take some 3x5 cards and just write the information down. And, so that if I ran into it again, I would have, a 3x5 card I could go back to and start, diagnose it myself and start fixing things. So
that's a great idea.
I really just enjoyed setting up computers and, really tweaking it and getting it where it needed to go. Now, I used to spend, I would spend like 13 hours setting a computer up. I was really, really that into it at one point.
Right.
And then I started getting a little smarter.
you mean for customers?
Yeah, exactly.
You were just extra thorough.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so yeah.
I still have a little bit of that. I like to overdo a little bit, and sometimes I got to take myself back. But, I started just fixing for family and friends, like I said, after that. And basically, I decided after listening to your show, I think I listened to your show from the first show. I just ended up finding it in the Zoom marketplace, and I listened to every single episode. So
go Zoom.
Yeah.
We were talking about this before the show. We both had the Zoom 80s, those big bricks.
Oh, yeah.
They were a lot of fun. I still liked my Zoom. The reason I got rid of it, like I was telling you, was because I couldn't run it on a Mac. I would have kept it if I could run it on a Mac, but not to get
I wish I could do something about that, but yeah. I don't think they ever will.
Yeah, I don't think so either. So, I remember putting the podcast in the Zoom marketplace, and people had been emailing me and say, put it in the Zoom. So, I'm all for it. I wish I had all my shows there.
Yeah, yeah. So anyways, after working on people's computers and, I'd make a little bit of cash here or there, people would just pay me whatever.
Yeah.
I decided this year, after listening to your show and listening to the other technicians talk about, computer repair and stuff, I really wanted to get back into it. And it's one of those things that you're constantly learning something new. So I constantly, I was educating myself, listening to your program, reading things online and just basically working on machines. So I decided to start my business in May of this year, and that's been working out real well for me. First thing I did was I really started looking at some of the I didn't want to recreate the wheel. So for me to go out there and produce everything, I work a full-time job during the day, and I just didn't have the time to put in all that stuff. So I was like, well, who else has already done this that I can take their things and use them for my business? And one of the things I got was the tech site builder.
Right.
That was one of the first things I got because I did not want to design a web page myself.
Right.
I didn't want to take the time to do it, even though I'm sure I could have. I just I wanted something that was already set in place, that was easy to use, and you know, hey, follow the videos, and you know, it was pretty darn simple. So
good. Yeah, you know, I made the Tech Site Builder because that was one of the main questions people were asking me is, how do you set up your website? What do you put on your website? And I had got so many questions, and I basically knew there was a market for it. And I knew my site worked, and I knew I had pretty extensive AdWords experience before I was even a computer technician. So I put that into the package, and I hoped that it's basically the formula I did for my computer repair shop. So I was hoping like everybody would have the same success, and your site looks great. I got to say.
Oh, appreciate it. Thanks for making that for us. definitely appreciate it.
No, but I could tell you followed all the instructions. The text is centered, you know, it's the right font size, because some people just blow it up and it makes it look like a used car dealership, even though they're using the Tech Site Builder. And the best thing about your site, and people who are not having success with AdWords are missing this, is that you have a picture of yourself fixing a computer right on your site. It's visible. It's you. It's real. And it's better than anything else that you could have on the site. That's one of the real most important parts of that site.
Exactly. Yeah, definitely don't be embarrassed to take a picture of yourself. And, you know, that was definitely a stage picture. There's no denying that. I had my daughter take that picture. But, you know, I wanted to put a real person, you know, with my site, because I think that makes a connection with people. And what people have been telling me, you know, I'm using Google AdWords currently today, mm-hmm. and started back in May. What people have been telling me is they were looking for, because I work out of my home, they were telling me that they were looking for a small local person that they felt that they could trust and, you know, to work on their computer. And I think with that picture there, it shows, hey, you know, this guy looks pretty friendly. When they talk to me on the phone, you know, I'm real friendly with them, and they really, you know, that just kind of makes a connection. I think you've talked about that before in the past, Steve, that, you know, people make that connection with you just on the phone, and they'll, you know, hey, I'm going to recommend you, you know, to everybody, even before you work on their computer.
Exactly. You get that too then, right?
Oh yeah, exactly. You know, people are like, they're real comfortable. Well, I like how you talk. So I'm going to, you know, I'm going to use you for all my repairs now. Oh, okay. You know, before I even touch your machine, exactly. They don't even know what I can do.
I know. It's amazing. Good job though. I mean, it does show you have like charisma and you know, people skills.
Yep. That's, you know, definitely need that. You know, you need that a little bit, yeah, and, yeah. You know,
exactly.
So using that Tech Site Builder was great. And then the Google AdWords, I followed everything to a T. I'll tell you, the only thing that got me was when Steve said, put your max for the day at 1,000. I was like, there is no way in the world that I'm doing that.
right.
So, but I'll be honest with you. Once I started it up, I was telling Steve earlier that I, you know, for the first couple months, I think I was getting more clicks than I was getting customers. And I think what was happening is I think local repair shops were kind of checking me out, because I was adjusting my click per, and when I was adjusting it, I would come up in the first slot or second slot,
right.
And so I think when I was doing that, I think, you know, people were going, oh, let's see what this guy's all about,
right?
You know, so
you gotta remember when you're checking out other people's sites, it's actually rude to click on their AdWords. I mean, yeah. I used to do it and not care, and then I finally said, okay, these guys are paying like $3 a click. I'm just going to type their URL into the browser.
Exactly. So. That's what I do now, because I didn't even realize that when you actually click on those side ads that you were actually paying for the company was paying for it.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, not a lot of people do until they get into AdWords.
Exactly. Then I know how important it is.
Yeah.
So I sat there and I put my max at like $50 a day, because I figured, you know, even if this gets out of control for a couple of days, I look at it every day.
Mm-hmm.
I can watch it and see what it's doing. And if it gets too crazy, I can back it back down. But I'm going to tell you right now, I've got mine set at I finally leveled around $2.36, I think it is.
$2.36?
Yep.
Per click. Okay.
Per click. And what that's getting me is about 1 to 2 clicks a day. I'm spending about $60 a month,
mm-hmm.
but I'm getting about, you know, anywhere between 10 and 15 customers a month. So, You know, even at my lower rate at $79, that's still a great deal.
Yeah, do the math, you know.
Exactly. Right. So, for those of you out there that are afraid to do it, just do it, and you got to stick with it for a few months though. You can't go in and start it up and get all scared. It's a little daunting at first.
Yeah.
But just, you know, stick with it. And for those that are really putting you know, their high click, you know, I've heard some of the high bids on the click throughs. You know, I really, you know, I thought the same thing. I thought I got to be up at you know, number one or number two. But I'm going to tell you, Google is pretty amazing because the area that I'm in, I have a 20-mile radius that I set my AdWords up in.
Right.
And what's ended up happening is, you know, if I type it in from here, it'll go to, I'll be in the second position, or I'll be in the fourth position, or the fifth position. And you know what? I really didn't want to be up in the top three, because I thought maybe people were just kind of clicking through, just kind of curious, mm-hmm. and not really getting customers. So I kind of wanted to be in the sidebar. And I think most of the time I do end up in the sidebar, about middle of the page, and it's a perfect position.
Yeah.
And the other thing I do with my AdWords is I put my price on there, because you'll read a lot of different AdWords, and a lot of them have, you know, they'll go, hey, low rates. Well, then you got to click on click on their ad. And I'm like, I don't want anybody to click on my ad unless they know exactly what I'm charging. Exactly. You know, let them know up front.
Exactly. It saves you money if you put, because less people will click on your ad if you put your price, but the people that do click on your ad are more quality leads because they already know what they're getting into.
Exactly. So again, and that was, you know what, Steve, I followed your videos. Your videos said, do it like this. And you know what? I followed the template and did it exactly like that.
Cool. I'm glad.
Anybody that's thinking outside of the box is good for some things, but in this case, just stick with what Steve tells you.
If you want a simple formula, just plug it in.
Exactly.
Well, I'm glad you're having success with it. Thanks for buying it.
Oh, no problem. No problem. It was well worth it. Well worth it.
Good.
The other thing that I did end up buying was I bought the laptop repair videos.
Okay.
And no, I'm not a shill for Steve or anything. I'm being honest with you, what tools that I bought before I started my business, because I wanted to educate myself and, you know, really have a good knowledge base out there, because I'm the type of guy, and I think this is what most technicians are. Most technicians are troubleshooters. I think we're troubleshooters as a whole. And you've got to be a good troubleshooter to fix problems. Even if you don't know how to fix it, you got to go, okay, how can I search, you know, either Google or find somebody else that's already done it and kind of follow what they do.
All right.
So anyways, I bought the laptop repair videos and love them. You know, they explained a lot of things. You know, even if you know some things about laptop repair, Steve saved me a ton of time in doing certain things that I would have spent hours figuring out, because I'll be honest with you, like a power jack repair, my first power jack repair, I just did just on a whim. And this was way before, I don't even think you had the laptop repair videos out at the time.
Right.
And, you know, what I would do, I didn't know how to get the power jack off of there. Right. And I had a 30 watt Radio Shack iron, and I would sit it and put it on there, and I knew I wasn't supposed to keep it on there too long. And, and it wasn't heating the solder up.
Right.
And I'm trying to figure out how to heat all five up and pull the posts out and all that kind of stuff. So, you know, the only thing I could do to break this thing down, and Steve explains it a lot better, you know, now that I know, but one of the things that I did was I took a pair of tin snips. Anybody that knows what those, that's for cutting big chunks of metal.
Yeah.
And I took tin snips and I cut the power jack off just so that enough metal was sticking up. I had the post where I could heat it up one at a time and pull them out with a pair of pliers.
Right. No, some of them are a pain. I take pliers and rip them off too sometimes. I mean, not tin snips. I take pliers. But
well, that's what I heard later. I heard you say, you know, we use, you know, pliers for doing this. And those things are tough, you know. You wouldn't think so, but they are.
Yeah.
So I learned, you know, one of the things that Steve had in there was how to fix a power brick for a laptop. Because I had one that came in the shop that had basically, the guy had broken the end off inside the computer, broke the power jack in the computer, and broke his tip off on his power adapter.
Right.
And
The reason I included that is because those bricks are so expensive that I ended up doing repairs on a lot of them just to keep the cost down for the customer.
And it was, you know what? I went to Radio Shack, got the end, you know, followed Steve's instructions again because I didn't want to reinvent the wheel. Right. And I'm sure I could have figured it out, but, you know, I'm going to follow somebody else's experience. So,
oh, good. Glad that worked.
Yeah. It worked really good. So, and you know what? The customer was, they were happy. They were ecstatic. They were like, wow, that's awesome. Because you know what? Theirs was a straight plug. And he's like, man, I really wish you could put a right angle plug on
here. Really? Well,
yeah. And that's what I did. He's like, oh, that's awesome.
you bought the adapter plug, Radio Shack?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yep.
No, and that's like, you know, people order the replacement plugs on eBay and stuff. I mean, Radio Shack has got some stuff, man. I mean, they have.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you could get like all different size power jack tips for that. Just plug them right on. Love it.
Exactly. A little bit of solder, put the shrink tubing over there, and it looked like a professional job when I got done.
Good, man. I like it.
You know, so. So, yeah, definitely, you know, and guys, I also want to tell you, you know, invest a little bit in your business. You know, one of the things I try to do is, you know, when I'm not as busy and I don't have as many computers coming in the shop, I try to better myself in learning different tips and tricks out there for fixing computers. And whether it's watching a video or reading a blog post online or, you know, in the Podnuts forums, you know, just checking out what new things are happening. Because that'll save you a lot of time when all of a sudden you get something that's coming in the shop that everybody else has been getting for the last 2 or 3 weeks. Right. And you go, oh, I know how to fix that.
Right.
And it saves you a ton of time.
I'll tell you, like, I used to Google everything. This was even before Podnuts even started, so I didn't have the Podnuts forums, but that's turning into a killer resource.
Oh, yeah.
And you don't even have to Google. You just go in there and search around and usually find what you're looking for.
Exactly. Exactly. And that's where I always start off, you know?
Cool.
Because, usually somebody in there has already encountered the problem by the time it gets to me. So.
Right. Right. Smart move, man. Sounds like you're efficient.
I try to be. In some things I am, and others I'm not. The other resource that I use the other thing I bought was the Technibble computer business kit.
Yeah.
Because again, I did not want to reinvent the wheel and write all these documents and different things for, you know, writing out a list for, you know, backing up people's computers and, you know, kind of coming up with a little contract for, you know, just to kind of protect myself, protect the customer. And so for $50, He's already made all the documents,
right?
You know, you just basically you download them, and then what I did was I went in and adjusted them, so I had a good base to start from, and I went in and adjusted them, and later on I added my own logo to it, you know, so it looked a little more professional, and you know that's what I'm using right now, and it, you know, 99% of the people don't even read the contract on the back; they just sign it and they're good to go. So
you use that for every customer then.
Exactly.
Good.
Yep.
Good.
Yep.
So. Yeah, Bryce from Tech. If anybody hasn't checked out technibble.com, check it out. It's like, it's a great site for computer repair technicians. It goes hand in hand with Podnuts. Podnuts is like the audio and the video, and Technibble is the blog and the text. So it all goes together. And Bryce is probably going to be on the show next week, too. I just talked to him, so that should be pretty cool.
Oh, cool. And the other thing, too, is if people aren't aware, I also subscribe to Bryce's newsletter, which comes out almost every day, if not every, you know, maybe every couple days.
Yeah.
But whenever something is going on, like if there's a new virus in the wild or there's a problem with Adobe or, you know, whatever's going on, he's putting that stuff out. So I don't have to sit there and pay attention to, you know, the news or whatever. I'm getting it right in my inbox.
Right.
And I'm able to open that up and go, oh, okay. You know, so I'm more aware of it. You know, what's going on in the community and stuff. So
yeah, you know, look, all the articles used to be written by him, but now it looks like he has somebody else writing as well as him. So there's probably much more content coming through.
It's been a lifesaver in a couple of different situations. Huh. So I really enjoy getting that that newsletter on a regular basis.
Cool.
The other thing I've been doing is I know, you know, Steve, you've got some, you know, affiliates and, using, you know, with Amazon and, eBay and
Newegg.
So what I did is I've been using both, you know, Internet Explorer, Firefox and Google Chrome. But what I did with Firefox since that's what I use for mostly business type stuff, is in my tabs, when I open it up, I've got your affiliate tags right in the tab. So when I open it up, and it automatically opens up and there's Amazon Newegg, you know, Micro Center, all these different ones up there. So when I click on it and I buy something from there, it's, you know, I know that you're getting the credit for it.
Oh man, that'd be awesome if everybody does what Jeff just said. I mean, it's easy. It's podnuts.com/Newegg, podnuts.com/Amazon, podnuts.com/eBay. If you just make those links in your bookmarks and on your tabs, it goes right to the site anyway. You don't even know you went through Podnuts. So
exactly.
Cool, man. Thanks for helping me out. This is like a commercial for me today. Thank you.
It's all true, though. It's all true. You know, Steve's not paying me a dime for any of this.
I didn't tell him to say any of this.
No.
Thank you.
So anyway, yeah. So anyways, and it's just an easy way because, you know, I'm like everybody else. I'm busy. I would forget to go, you know, if I'm searching for something on Amazon or Newegg or whatever, I would forget to go through, you know, to type that in. So I just made it easy on myself.
I do it myself. I still buy stuff from Amazon without going through my link.
just make a, you know, make a tab and keep it when you open it up.
I will. Thanks.
Let's see. One of the other things I've been doing is I've been using Microsoft Access because I bought a TechNet subscription. I'll talk about that in a minute. But I've been using Access just as a database because I wanted a simple, easy database that I could just keep track of customers.
Okay.
And, you know, I know there's probably all-in-one solutions out there, but quite honestly, they all look so complicated to me. And I love fixing computers, and I can't stand the paperwork.
Right. I'm with you.
So I wish I could just do the computer repairs and forget all the paperwork, but that's not a reality. So,
did you make a little database with forms and stuff? You just fill it in real quick or?
Yeah, it's just, you know, it's more of it almost looks like a address book or a contact list that you would use in Outlook or something like that.
Right.
And you can just add the people's information in. And then, it's a database specific to, you know, my company, TechNut. All the information's there. If it's got a little note area that I can say, you know, hey, I worked on such and such a computer. Here's what I did. So I've got that just so I can, you know, I can email them and different things down the road, kind of build that database to kind of keep in contact with people.
Smart move. I just got to say again what I used. I don't even think they make it anymore because I'm the same way. And, you know, QuickBooks roll around. I'm like, no, get that out of here. And I looked at some online too, and they were a little too much. But what actually I ended up using was Microsoft Accounting 2008, I think it was. And they have a template in there for IT service or something like that. And I pretty much followed the template because I did want to have reports and stuff, seeing how much money I spent. And that was when my dad was working with me, so he could set some of that stuff up. So we set up like inventory and stuff, and it wasn't that bad. It actually did work for us. So I have to recommend it, even though you listen to past episodes of Podnuts, you'll hear the fiasco I had when I first got it. But anyway,
I'm not even sure if they make it anymore, actually.
Okay. Well, you know what? Get an old copy then. Cheaper.
Yeah, you probably get it on eBay for, you know, next to nothing.
Right. Okay. But that was just my two cents.
All right. Cool. Let's see. What else is that? The other thing I did was I was using TechNibble's got a sheet for doing, you know, basically hours worked. It's an Excel spreadsheet. Okay. Hours worked, and then what I did, and then I had to come up with a way as I was buying parts, but I was charging more, you know, to cover, you know, shipping costs and, you know, kind of raising that revenue for myself a little bit. What I would do is I would just add in what the part really cost, what I charge a customer. And I just kind of keep a running tab of what I've been doing over the past months. And I needed a simple solution where I could go in, plug in a couple numbers, plug in a name, and it was something I could go back to and look at it, and everything kind of totals itself. So that sheet was invaluable to me, and that's from the TechNibble Computer Business Kit.
Oh, so that came as a file or as a file?
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
Yeah,
cool.
Yeah, he designed that, and it's a great way to keep track of your business. You know, I had to do a couple adaptations, you know, for how I wanted to do mine, but But it basically, you know, I had the foundation from him, and I was able to tweak it for me, and it just works. And now, you know, now I've got that copy. So
good. Hey, oh, by the way, if anybody does want to buy the Technimble business kit, use the Podnuts link. Just go to podnuts.com, scroll down to the bottom of the page, and there's a link for it there. Just want to say, you know, because Jeff is plugging it well. And if you do want to buy it, then you go through the Podnuts link, and you'll get it.
Yeah. And, you know,
go ahead.
I was gonna say, you know, I want everybody to remember out there, too, and this is the way I've always looked at these things, is every time you're buying a tool or something for your business, it's tax deductible.
Yes.
So you're not really paying for it. Really, the government's going to give you money back, basically, for, you know, it's going to help offset your taxes and different things you have to pay in your business.
Good point. Very good point. All these things you mentioned can be written off.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Okay, so let's see. Going, I was using, I did buy a TechNet subscription, mm-hmm. and I think you guys were talking about it. You know, this was months back, or I'd seen there was a rebate or something. I got like 27% off, and I think I got it for, I don't know, a couple $100 or $250 or something like that. And that's been an invaluable tool in itself. I heard people talk about changing retail discs to OEM, but nobody really kind of, you know, really said, oh yeah, you kind of do it this way.
Okay.
So I finally went online and did some really, you know, really good digging, and I've done this on several machines. You can change. What's cool about it is with the TechNut retail disc, and this is from Microsoft. It basically gives you access to any of their software they have, all their server software, all their you know, all their Windows software. You get like 10 licenses per thing. So once I got the retail discs, you know, you can't use the ID for the real retail discs on an OEM machine.
You can't. Now, see, that's what I wanted to ask you. Did you try?
Right. I've tried.
Okay, you tried.
Yeah, it's failed.
I swear, so, I've run a retail disc on XP and put in the OEM code and it worked, but I guess it wasn't the TechNet retail disc.
Okay. But and maybe with that, yeah, maybe with certain manufacturers, they're all a little bit different, is what I've noticed.
Right.
But what I finally found out, and this actually works, and it's really, really easy to do. Once you download, if you have a retail disc, you can actually change one little file, and I can send you the links over too later. You can actually change one little file, and it's really simple to do. And you change it from, I think the words are retail to, let me see here. It's the i386 setup.ini file, and you just do it in Notepad. You change it from retail to, or it might be there's a number. Change it to 76487 OEM or something like that. So you're changing a file, you save the file, and you reburn an ISO to a disk. And that gives you basically an OEM version. That's the only difference when we're talking about XP.
Wow. Yeah, definitely definitely send me the link for that.
Okay, I'll do that. So that's really, really easy to do. I've done it. I've done it with Windows XP Home, which I already had because I had some Home Edition discs, and I put Service Pack 3 on them and all that kind of stuff. But I, you know what? I never had an XP Professional.
Right. Yes. That's. I think all technicians, they have like bits and pieces of all these Windows discs.
Exactly. So I was running into some machines, even from consumers that I was getting, that were actually, I'm like, where'd you get these machines from? Because they're, you know, they're older machines, but they had Windows XP Professional. So I'm like, oh, okay. So I had to learn how to create a disc, and it works flawlessly. Good. Had no problem, you know, getting them updated and all that kind of stuff. So that worked out real good.
Good tip.
I'm sorry?
Good tip.
Okay. The other thing is, now with Vista is probably actually, I know everybody, you know, rails on Vista, but Vista was, and I wish Microsoft would not have changed this, but Vista is great because it doesn't, you have one disk that has all the versions on it, retail, OEM, whatever, it doesn't matter. What ends up happening is if you put it in a machine and you put it, once you load it up, when you put it in a product code, okay. that OEM, retail, whatever, it automatically knows which version it is, and that's what it starts to download. So it automatically does it. So you only need, so when you're dealing with Vista, all you need is one disk.
Hmm.
You know, a retail disk will, you know, will work for anything, OEM, retail, whatever. So that you don't even have to mess with.
That makes it easy.
Yeah, exactly. And you can also, you know, if you want to put a certain version on there, you know, you can do it manually too. It gives you all the versions, and you just click on it. In Windows 7, okay, now we're going back to what XP did. Windows 7 is the same thing. You're changing one file, and it's the EI.cfg file. And when you change that, you're entering, there's a it's a registry value that you're entering, and it tells you exactly what to do. You're just changing it from retail to OEM. So once you do that, so you can again, do that on, you burn an ISO again.
You can do that on 7 too then, huh?
Yes.
Okay.
Yep, and it does work. So, the only difference is, you know, you've got all these different versions of, you know, 7. You've got Starter Edition, Basic, Home Premium, whatever the Professional is now. I don't even know what they call it anymore. And then, you know, Ultimate and all that kind of stuff. So,
is that all on the Windows 7 disk? Does it all come on one disk like Vista did or no?
No, it doesn't. It's all separate like XP was.
Gotcha. Okay.
Except worse, because I think XP only had 3 editions where, did it have 3 editions or 2?
Home and Professional. And then, I mean, it was Home and Professional. They did have Media Center and...
That's right.
I think that's it. Yeah, they keep coming out with more and more. I bet Windows 8 is going to have like 10 different versions.
Man, I hope not.
I know, me too.
Stop making it so hard on us.
That might be when everybody goes over to Mac.
Okay, now we'll get into that another day. Anyway, I'm just kidding. I like Macs. They're good for what they're good for.
Yeah.
All right. yeah, you know, talking about Windows Media Center, too, one of the things I learned is I had a Windows Media Center machine that would come in, and it's usually the 2005 version. And I think I had I did have an OEM disk for Media Center 2005 edition.
Mm-hmm.
And that was, you know, and I was able to get that to work with the product code on that machine. But what I ended up finding out was I had a machine in here the other day, and I use a little program called Keyfinder, because the guy didn't have his disk. He didn't have the keys for, you know, Windows or Office or anything. So I went in the machine. I load this little program off my USB, flash drive, and it finds all the Windows keys on there. Well, when it did, it came up and it said Windows XP Professional. And silly me, never thought to go look and see what was loaded on there, you know, right clicking on my computer and stuff. So I just assumed it was Windows XP Professional. Well, when I tried to load it up using an OEM Windows XP Professional disk, yeah, it didn't work. And it was having all kinds of problems.
What were you looking at? You had to use Keyfinder because they didn't have the sticker. I see.
Yeah, it was a home-built machine happened was he ended up, somebody had rebuilt the machine, and they had taken the Media Center from a Dell machine.
Okay.
You know, moved it over there. I ended up getting him a Windows XP Home just to kind of get rid of all the problems he was having with the new hardware.
Yeah, most people don't use Media Center anyway. But
no.
So Media Center, so the reason that happened, though, and Keyfinder said it was Professional, is because Media Center is Professional. Isn't that right?
Yes. Okay. And it's just, yeah, and that's what I ended up, once I did some research on it, basically it said, yeah, Windows Professional, or Media Center is Windows Professional with some add-ons.
Right, okay.
So, yeah, same basic shell, but, you know, so. And let's see. And... let's see. Okay. And that just kind of goes in my other thing, you know, this is something I had to learn and I'm still learning, is taking your time with your repairs, making sure that you've got, you know, all your ducks in a row, so to speak, making sure that you've got, you know, when you're looking at the sticker, making sure that you can read the number one, and making, especially on laptops, because a lot of times they get rubbed down pretty bad.
Right.
But also, you know, just making sure which, because I don't know how many technicians have done this, but I've done this several times where, well, not, you know, a few times where, you know, I'm thinking, oh, this laptop's old. It's got to be Windows XP Home. I didn't look at it. I go to load up Windows XP Home, put in the code, and doesn't work. Then I look on the bottom and go, oh. Then I got to waste all that extra time to go through put professional on. So.
Okay, back on in my day, my biggest thing that happened to me was SATA and IDE. Every time I tried to guess, like, oh, this must have a SATA drive in it, hard drive, I was wrong. Like every time. And I should have had a 50-50 shot at this. Every time I was wrong. So yeah, definitely take your time, find out what you need, get the right parts, get the right memory. There's DDR3, so it's DDR, DDR2, DDR3. Your hard drive could be SATA, it could be IDE. I mean, there's just too much stuff coming out now.
Exactly. Yep. So yeah, just taking that little extra time to kind of set yourself up, and so that you just save yourself time, from having to spend, extra time on a computer, and it helps you turn around that much quicker.
Right.
One of the other things that I ran into, and this is what I want to talk about, because I don't know if people have done this before, and I just tried it just on a whim. And that's changing a similar motherboard without actually reinstalling Windows.
Okay.
And what I mean by that was, it was not the same exact motherboard. It was this particular one was a NVIDIA 6100,
mm-hmm.
and it was probably 2 to 3 years old. And I ended up their motherboard was gone. Everything else was working fine. Yeah. I ended up going and getting an NVIDIA 6150, and I said, "Well, let me," because I really didn't want to reinstall Windows because they had all the user accounts and. Just, too much stuff that I would have had to, reset back up.
Right,
so,
right.
Basically no problems. I put in a new motherboard. It recognized it. I downloaded the drivers. It changed everything over and everything worked flawlessly.
Great.
So
yeah,
I think if you're close.
Yes.
To the same one, you can use it. No problem.
That's it. And that's a good tip. I mean, most of the times I would replace like Pentium 4s with like new, socket 775 Celerons or something. So that would never work,
Or if
you switch over from Intel to AMD and the chipsets are all completely different and does not work there either.
No.
But yeah, like you said, if you're close, you got it. So that's a good idea. I mean, it's just tough when you're replacing a motherboard that's old. You have to try to find another old one if you want to do that. Where did you get a motherboard? On eBay, that old?
No, actually it was a brand new motherboard. Because the 6150s, it was a what was it? It was an Intel. I think it was a socket 775.
And it was computer was 3 years old. Okay. I guess it's close enough. 3 years. I guess 3 years is not that bad. Not too old.
Yeah, cuz I was able to switch over the CPU and everything. So everything plugged in, no problem. I actually got it at Micro Center. I ran over there and picked it up. And
lucky you, man. Micro Center, that was the thing with me, is they always carried only the newest stuff. So
okay.
I would have like socket 478, Pentium 4s, and I'd be replacing them with like, AMD 2s, and I could never do that. So
no,
good for you. You got a good job on that one.
Well, I think we've almost, I think we've kind of hit a plateau with some of the sockets because you've got, 2 or 3 year old or 2 or 3 socket generations back, they're still making in a lot of mainstream computers.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like the older socket 775, that's still a mainstream computer. What I'm getting in the shop anyways, I'm seeing a lot of those.
Yeah.
DDR2 memory and, the 667 DDR2. So and that's like the middle of the road.
Right. Good. Is any going to last long? I mean, wait till the changes come. I mean, it sucks.
I know. Constantly keeping up. I don't keep as many old parts as I used to. I usually put them in machines and give them to people or try to help people out. Or, you get that rare occasion where you get something in the shop and you go, I got something real, real close to that. I think we can make this work,
I used to recycle and resell RAM all the time. We never had too much RAM in the shop because it would go out of one computer into another. So,
exactly. Yep. Yeah, RAM can go quick.
Exactly.
Laptop repairs as far as laptop screens.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things I learned just doing one the other day was that and I, you've talked about it before, and I think some of your other technicians have talked about it on Podnuts, is that if you, when you pull this back of the screen off, if you use that number on the back to order the screen,
yeah,
that works a lot better than the than just using the model number of the laptop. And the reason being is this particular one that I was looking at, the connector could have been on the right or left-hand side.
Uh-huh.
So I, when I did a model number search and I gave him a price, you know, I said, hey, screen's going to be about $100. I went in and once I got in and actually pulled the screen out and turned it around and put it in, I was like, oh, no, that's not going to work because it's saying, you know, look which side your connector's on. So once I typed in the number of the number on the back of the screen, that's the one that popped up. And I was able to, I think I got that from DVD Super 999,
good.
Like everybody talks about. So
it's always a good idea to do that. I mean, that's saved my butt a couple times, actually a bunch of times. And I also found that searching for screens by laptop model number, the screens were actually more expensive. Because I think that the sellers know that somebody who's searching for a screen just by laptop model number is not a hardcore technician. You know what I mean? And they're able to get a couple extra bucks from that person because that's what the price, the market price is. But if you search for the model number of the screen, I always found it cheaper. So from the same seller I have. So I don't know if that still goes, but when I was doing it, that's what I found. So you save some money that way too.
Well, and you know, the other thing too is when I got this particular screen, this was on a little bit higher end laptop, and I think it was an HP, and it had the, you know, nicer glossy screen, and there's different, you know, insides to them, I guess. Mm-hmm. And one of the things I learned was when I quoted this guy $100, when I ended up finding it, it was actually $120, $122 or something like that, which was free shipping.
Yeah.
And I ended up talking her down to, I got it for $112. So,
good.
You know, so you can, yeah, on a lot of her stuff, she's got, you know, where you can actually, you know, give a bid and go, hey, I'll pay this much. And she might come back with a counter bid and, you know, whatever. And you just kind of go yay or nay. And so.
Great tip. I didn't know that. And you know what? From now on, if anybody talks to her, DVD Super 999, she might be thinking that she's getting all this business out of the ether. Tell her you heard about her on Podnuts. We need to get some recognition here for this. I've been plugging her for years, and I bet you if you said Podnuts to her, she would have no idea what you're talking about. So she needs to know this.
That's a good idea. Yeah, I like that.
All right, cool. Thanks.
The other thing that I really try to concentrate on, and I know, Steve, you've talked about this before, is just making sure that the machine that you get in your shop leaves your shop better than when it arrived.
Yeah, that's
key. You know, and just kind of wiping it down and, you know, making sure it's clean. And it's, I always get the comments, wow, this is a lot cleaner than when I gave it to you.
Let me tell you, that's so important, and it's standards, too. I mean, I could tell from looking through your webcam that your room is clean. Okay, you're probably a cleaner person than some people, and some people don't even think about cleaning laptops just because their standard of cleanliness is not that high. It's like they're comfortable being around dirt. You know, me, I had to get it. I have to get it off. So it was like, you know, almost neurotic. But still, raise your standards. If you feel like you have low standards and you don't think you need to clean anything, clean it. It will always be better for you, and that customer feels like they're getting this new machine. It's that little extra step, but it goes such a long way. It really does.
Exactly. Yeah, people care about that. Like you've talked about in the past, customer service is number one.
Yeah, it's huge.
You know, so
I mean, it's huge because any small business person now, that's something that they can do that the big businesses are just completely failing at. So it's your way in. You know what I mean? I think it's your way into making a successful business.
Exactly. Let's see. So let's talk about some of the tools. Some of the tools that I ended up using. And I know Steve DiMico talked about this, where he had it, and I felt a little bit better after hearing this. I think it was on Nuts at Night. He talked about getting a computer where he ran 7 scanners on it and still couldn't fix the problem.
Yeah.
And because I ran into the same darn thing. And I'm like, ugh. I couldn't believe it. I'm like, I ran all these scanners, and it was so frustrating. But I had to come to a point because I could spend hours and hours and hours, and I want to fix the problem.
Right.
But when you're trying to get the computer back to a customer, you got to think about that and go, and how much is your time worth?
Right.
You know, I'm only charging $79, you know, and I want to be paid well for my time. So the more time I take with it, you know, the less I'm getting paid essentially per hour.
Right.
That's the way I look at it.
Good point. Smart.
So, yeah, I, you know, again, it's just one of those things, just something to think about, because I tend to go overboard a little bit. I don't know how you were, Steve, but when something comes into my shop, like for instance, I did the screen repair on a laptop, got the screen repair, got everything booted up, is ready to go. I go in there and, you know, what does everybody find most of the time? Oh, Norton Antivirus is running, but it hasn't been updated in 172 days. Oh, and they haven't paid for it.
Right.
And I have a hard time letting a computer in, and maybe this is, you know, partially, you know, fault on me, but I have a hard time letting my computer or a computer leave the shop that has a potential to get infected, has a potential to get, you know, that doesn't have a working antivirus on it. So, you know, a lot of times I basically call a customer up and go, hey, do you plan on renewing this Norton antivirus? And they always go, well, no, they want like $60 a year for it. And I'm like, okay, well, what I can do is I can pull that off and, you know, I can put, you know, Microsoft Security Essentials or AVG or whatever. The other things that I put on there is SuperAnti spyware.
Good.
And malware bytes.
Good.
So,
now look, because go ahead, finish up.
I was going to say, with SuperAnti spyware and malware bytes, what I've found is they both will find little bit different things, you know, and they both do a job of, you know, finding, you know, a lot of the junk in there that you're able to get rid of. So,
yeah,
it's kind of a safety net, you know, and you can run both of them. So I just kind of put them on there, let the customer know about them. But I, you know, you talked about, you know, becoming a reseller, which I did. I did this a while back when I started my shop up. I became a reseller for SuperAnti spyware, malware bytes, Carbonite. You know, anybody I could find that would had a reseller program, that's what I started doing. But you gave a good tip with SuperAnti spyware in that we really should be selling it at our shops, because you can get a phenomenal deal from SuperAnti spyware if you buy a little bit in bulk and, you know, sell these licenses to people. And really, now that I think about it, that's really what we should be doing, because nobody is going to take SuperAnti spyware and manually update it and run the scanner.
That's the thing. You could run it in your shop manually, but the customer needs to have the automatic set up.
Exactly.
But
so,
I want to talk about one thing you said, though, when you were talking about installing SuperAnti spyware, and then we're going to do a SuperAnti spyware commercial real quick.
Okay.
Is you say you put Microsoft Security Essentials and you put AVG. Well, why? I mean, here when I started doing it in my shop, I was selling Norton, and I only sell products I believe in. In 2009, Norton did a complete, I hate to say 180 because it sounds like 360, whatever. They did a complete turnaround where they made the slimmest antivirus that I've probably ever seen them have. And we tested it and I ran it and I loved it. And I loved that it was Norton because people recognized the name Norton. So we were selling Norton antivirus, not the security suite, not Norton 360. And we were selling antivirus instead of putting AVG on people's computers, because AVG wasn't finding stuff and these computers were coming back. So we were reselling Norton. So definitely reselling an antivirus and an anti-spyware is key. We made a lot more money. The customers were happier. They walked out with a big yellow Norton thing, and you know what I mean? It said Norton and people know the name. Now, SuperAnti spyware, it's just like you said. It finds things that these other programs don't. And let me just say a couple things about SuperAnti spyware. They're a sponsor for Podnuts. So, what if you haven't run SuperAnti spyware yet, definitely go to superantispyware.com, download the free version of SuperAnti spyware, try it, see if you like it. You'll see that it finds stuff that the other programs don't find. If you want to upgrade to the Pro Edition, you can do that. The Pro Edition, you know, like Jeff said, it has the ability to schedule a scan, has real-time protection, automatic definition updates. Their database is updated 3 to 10 times daily. Lifetime licenses are also available for it. It will run peacefully with your antivirus. So you could run Norton at SuperAnti spyware or whatever antivirus, Nod 32, Kaspersky, whatever you want to sell. Run this alongside of that. It's lightweight. It's easy to install. It's easy to use. If you want to buy the pro version, use the coupon code FRIEND at checkout and you'll get a discount. Now, as far as the reseller program, everything Jeff said. Definitely need to sign up. You definitely need to be selling. If you want to sign up for the, and you're going to get a huge discount if you buy in bulk. And there's two ways to do the reseller program. You could, like you said, buy multiple licenses at a bulk discount and then resell them to your customers. Or you could become an affiliate of Super Anti Spyware if you don't want to buy in bulk, where they basically give you a link and you put it on your website or whatever. And every time somebody buys Super Anti Spyware through your link, you make a commission. But I like the buying in bulk and marking it up and selling it to your customers for a fair price. Contact Mike Duncan at Super Anti Spyware, 541-607-6553, extension 111. Call him on the phone. Talk to him. It will be refreshing to talk to a real person after all the internet stuff you guys are doing. Talk to a real person and tell him you heard about us through Podnuts. He's going to hook you up, set you up as a reseller for Super Anti Spyware, and you'll be good to go. Thank you, Super Anti Spyware, for being a sponsor of Podnuts. Back to you, Jeff.
I know you said you sold Norton in your shop. Now, do you still recommend Norton even today?
I haven't used it in 2010 at all. But I think the antivirus, the 2010 antivirus, is still slim. It's still slimmed down. I'm pretty sure. Okay. I was getting it on eBay for $15 a pop. From a company called HCDITrading.com. And we were selling it for $35, so we made about more than half our money back on that. And HCDITrading.com. They were great. We'd buy like 10 copies. I wouldn't buy like 100. Buy 10 or 50, and they were always $15 if you bought anything more than 10. So,
okay,
there you go.
Very good. All right. Yeah, definitely looking at. Yeah, because I think you're right when it comes to running a business. I really think we need to start. A lot of us are not salespeople by trade, so it's hard to upsell sometimes. But really, when you're thinking about that bottom line and really taking care of the customer and giving them a quality product, a lot of times people will pay for stuff. If you recommend it and you tell them, they'll just go, "Oh, okay," And it doesn't always have to be free, So exactly. Yeah, I agree with you. That's definitely something we. Probably most of us technicians need to work on in our shops.
Well, you know what happened? Know why I started doing it? Because I got sick of sending people to Staples. Because they'd come in and they'd go, "Do you have Norton? Do you have McAfee?" And be like, "No, but there's a Staples down the street." And I'm like, finally, I said, "All right, enough. We're going to get Norton." And we did. And I wouldn't sell McAfee in a million years. Unless they did what Norton did. Norton really came through in 2009. And people who aren't familiar with Norton and just know them as the sucky, huge, bulky antivirus company are listening to this and going, "Steve doesn't know what he's talking about." No, I'm telling you, in 2009, Norton Antivirus was awesome. And I think 2010, just the antivirus, it's still pretty good. So there, take it for what you want.
No, I think you're right. And again, I think what happened to a lot of these big companies is they started getting into all these, they wanted to be your everything.
Yes,
and I think most of us technicians have run into a problem where there's been many a times where I get a computer in a shop and it's like, "Oh, won't connect to the internet," or "It won't connect to this," or "Won't connect to that." And you go, "Okay, yeah, McAfee's on there. Yep. They got their own firewall program that takes over the Windows firewall." You go, "Uninstall that or shut it off."
Right.
Boom. All of a sudden, "Oh, I can connect to another computer in my house now. Look at
right,
that."
Right, right. I could get on the internet.
Exactly.
I've gone to like more than one occasion, gone to places that have Trend Micro, gone to customers' houses, and they say, "I can't connect to the internet." I right click on Trend Micro in the taskbar down there, and I uncheck halt internet access, and I go, "Now you can." I can't play Pongo, and then I go there. I look at it. They're running Trend Micro. I just right click on it. I uncheck the box. It says halt internet access. I don't know how it gets checked, and then then they get on the internet. It's just that easy. So yeah, these companies.
That's a great tip because I wouldn't even have thought about that one. I wonder what that feature is in there for halt internet. I mean.
Don't know.
That's kind of silly.
Yeah.
One of the scanners that I do want to talk about, it's an online scanner. I haven't really heard anybody talk about it.
Okay.
It's the Microsoft Online Scanner.
Okay.
And when I had this real bad with this real bad virus, and I think it was that what do they call it? It was a rootkit. And it was it attacked one of the Windows files.
Okay.
I think it was a TDS or I don't know, something like that. Anyways, so I used a Microsoft Online scanner because I was at my wit's end. I'd run all these different scanners, and it had found a bunch of stuff, got rid of it, still couldn't connect to Internet Explorer. It would connect to the Internet. I couldn't update. I couldn't do any Windows updates. I couldn't update Supranos Spyware. Couldn't update Malwarebytes. None of this stuff would work. So I went on a Microsoft Online scanner, and that actually – this didn't fix the problem, but it does a pretty thorough scan. And it's I'll send you the link for that because it's the old onecare.live.com.
Oh, man.
But anyways, the scanner found this rootkit. The problem was there were some things that I was able to – once I saw what was going on, I was actually able to go in the registry and remove these files and remove some of this stuff once I found out where it was.
Right.
But this particular rootkit that attacked this Windows file – even in safe mode, it would say I got rid of it, reboot, and it didn't work. But with all this other stuff, I was able to get some things working. So,
No, that's a good recommendation if it's working for you.
Yep, for what it is, it's not something I use all the time, but it's one of those things. I was like, it seems like it's working pretty good. Yeah. So
decent.
Let's see, and. I know a lot of people have talked about charging, charging fair prices and in their different areas, and I've heard some of these people say, hey, this is all my area. Well, this is all I can get from my area,
right.
I'm going to tell you, I am in, probably the biggest unemployment state in the United States of America, being in Michigan. And it's pretty slim pickings up here, and there are a ton of people on Craigslist that, they're like, hey, I'll fix your computer for $25. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I know people that charge $69 and $79 and really should not be technicians. And I get a lot of their customers. They're like, yeah, this isn't working right. And so anyways, You gotta figure. I think you gotta charge what you feel you're worth, or what you feel your time is worth.
Right.
And I want to still give a fair price. And I thought $79 is a fair price if you bring it to me. If I got to come and get it and drop it back off, it's $99. And people will still pay that even if times are hard, because they gotta have their online bingo or poker or whatever it is they're playing online. So.
It's almost like those Craigslist guys. They're not really a threat. Don't go by them to judge how much you can charge, really, because they're actually, it's good that they're there, because the customer will go to them first. They'll botch the computer up, and then they'll look for somebody like you.
Exactly.
When I set up my shop, I didn't do any research on what other people were charging. I had no clue for years, and I still didn't check a lot of places. I heard that the Geek Squad was really high. I never looked at their rates. So that's probably not the best way to do it, but still it allowed me to just go, okay, what do I think that this is worth? And I did well with it, but you are kind of guessing. But
yeah,
still, if I would have looked at other people and maybe they were all charging $50, then I would have been like, oh, I have to charge $50 too. And I didn't. So it's good to look, and sometimes it's good not to look.
And I think too, what you're going to see is you're going to get a little bit, when you charge a fair price, but it's not really super low, you're going to get a good, a better customer.
Right, right.
And, the chances of not getting paid and all that kind of stuff, that kind of goes down a little bit. When you deal with people that are, and people understand too, that sometimes you get what you pay for. So I think it's important for everybody to look at themselves and go, hey, what's my time worth?
Right,
and I'll be honest with you, my time is not worth $25. I could be doing a million other things besides making, spending a couple hours on a computer and making $25.
Totally. Totally.
And I don't know how many people out there, one of the things I did when I started my business is I wanted to go legit. So one of the things I did was I incorporated my business. I made an LLC. And just a real quick tip out there is a lot of people, you go to these online sites and they'll go, hey, we'll set you up an LLC and we'll get you a EIN number, which is an employee identification number, for those of you that don't know, so you can get a bank account with your business name on it and stuff. They'll charge you like $400 by the time you get, you do all that stuff. And I know in Michigan, what I did was I actually went to our Michigan website and looked for, you know, how to do it myself. And it cost me $50 to get the LLC started. You can go on a website to the IRS, and they give you an EIN number almost instantaneously. You just fill out the information.
Was it easy?
It was super easy.
Really?
Super easy.
Now,
really
as an LLC, you get better. It's better for taxes, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, you know, I didn't think I needed it to do a corporation. And again, I'm not an accountant or anything like that. So check with an accountant or attorney. But I've always heard that the LLC being a limited liability corporation, basically, it gives you a buffer between your personal assets and your company assets. And that's really all I was looking for. It's something that if I blew up somebody's computer or blew up their house or something, right, or whatever, you know, they weren't going to come after me personally.
Right. Good point. That's good to know that it's so easy to do that and it's so cheap.
Yeah. So you don't have to pay $400. Like I said, a lot of times $50 and we'll get you everything you need. Go down to your local bank and they'll give you a business account for free. And I think the bank I use, they give me, I can deposit 200 things, a month. And that's, for what I do right now, that's plenty.
Right, right.
So you're not going to pay any fees for any of that stuff, free checks, all that kind of stuff. So, I just wanted to give that out there.
Sure.
And one of the last things I wanted to talk about was, I know you guys have been talking about soldering tips over the last few. And I knew next to nothing about soldering. I had I just went in and figured I can figure it out. It heats up the solder and I can pull this off and put this new thing in and it's be good to go. So I've tried everything, man. I've my first power jack repair, I had that, I bought that little sucker machine thing that you kind of click in place and you put it next to the solder and you try to heat it up and you try to suck it out while
forget
you're trying to hold
that.
The board.
Forget that.
It's crazy. But what I ended up learning over time, and I think this was actually in the videos you included from somebody else on soldering tips. I think that's where I saw it, or it might have been somewhere else on the laptop repair videos. Is that here's what I learned and started doing, and it worked fine for me. You can take that sucker machine, and what you do is what I actually do now with the power jacks is I actually add solder to each of the points. And so it makes a big ball of solder. Now, what this helps it do is it helps melt all the solder.
Mm.
So once you heat it up, you can get that sucker in there, and it once you click it and pop it out, it'll suck all the solder up.
Oh, I see what you're doing.
And clears out that hole so that once you do it four or five times, however many posts are in there, you can just pull, kind of yank on the power jack, comes right out.
So
no
you
problem.
Still use that sucker thing?
Well, I do now. Granted, I did go buy one of those the Radio Shack ones with the ball on it, but I haven't used it yet. Oh. So
yeah, I didn't have success with the pen type one like you're talking about, but I used that turkey baster one, worked pretty good for me. So
okay, if you add solder to it, that gives you it just heats up all the solder and you're able to suck it out a lot easier.
Good tip. Yeah, that's good. Maybe I should have did that.
But so it was one of those things that after doing four or five of them, I finally figured it out.
That's how it works, man.
I know. Oh man. So I think that's about it. Yeah, why don't we go with some emails?
All right, let's do it. Thanks for all that info, by the way.
Oh, no problem.
I like that your notes were prepared thoroughly. I'm serious.
I tried.
I'm serious. It's great. All right, this is from Lotfi. I think this is Lotfi. No, it's not. It's from Michael. Michael says, one of the frustrating problems is I can never solve is the wild keyboard cursor. When I type a sentence, the cursor jumps all over the place, and I can never type more than a few letters, and I look up and the cursor has moved to another word. I've never been able to solve this. Do I need a new keyboard? Do I need to reinstall keyboard drivers? Is the keyboard connector dirty? Is it a chipset problem? This happens with many models after 1 to 2 years. Okay, let me read this again. A keyboard... When he types a sentence, the cursor jumps all over the place. Well,
is he talking about a laptop?
Yeah, I guess. I'm not sure. If it is a laptop, what I would do is I'd take the keyboard out and I'd hook up an external keyboard and see if it happens with an external keyboard. If it happens with an external keyboard, then your laptop keyboard's okay, and your connector's okay. it might be a software problem at that point. It probably is a software problem at that point. But chances are you got a bad keyboard here. If it keeps happening with many models, I don't know. I haven't had that experience. But it sounds like you got a bad keyboard to me if it's jumping around like that. So try it with an external keyboard. If the external keyboard fails, then external keyboard works, then I think you got a bad keyboard. Go on eBay and buy a new keyboard for $15 and replace it out. And oh, also one of the things I also mentioned to him was use a Linux Live CD and see if it happens in Linux. If it happens in Linux, then you know it's a hardware problem. It's not a Windows problem. Got anything to add on that one, Jeff?
No, I did have a laptop where it was I would hit one of the keys on the keyboard and it would, some of them wouldn't work, but they would. And this was what was weird. It did work with a Live CD, and it was working fine. But then when I went into Windows, for some reason, it just was not working right.
Yeah.
And it was like sometimes it would miss things. But it ended up being a bad keyboard, and I got one for $10, replaced it, and the problem went away. So
weird, but it worked in Linux.
Yeah, as far as when I was in there and typing things, or maybe I was just, you know, maybe the keys that were bad, I wasn't hitting for whatever reason, whatever I was typing. So it could have just been coincidence.
Could have been. Because, I mean, that does sound fishy, but it's not out of the realm of possibility.
Anything's possible with computers.
Seriously. They're crazier than people are.
Yeah.
All right. This is from, how do you say that name? This is from a person. He says, "Dear sir, I bought a video to repair quite some times ago from you." Okay, not from this country. "It's good video, but I don't know how to unlock my BIOS password." He's got a Toshiba Portage M400. Okay, I guess I didn't cover this in the videos, but if you want to unlock your BIOS password, you're going to have to get to the CMOS battery. And the way to do that is you got to unplug your AC adapter. You got to unplug or take your battery out of the laptop. And you probably got to take that thing apart to get down to the motherboard level. Look for the watch. It looks like a watch battery on your motherboard. Pop that out. Once it's popped out, hit power button on your computer when with nothing plugged in, just to dissipate all the charge out of the motherboard. And then, or sometimes you even have to wait an hour or 24 hours to have that battery out of there, so the motherboard discharges. But usually you don't. Just pop the battery out. Press your power button, discharge whatever's on the motherboard, put the battery back in, put it all back together, and you should be okay with your BIOS password. What do you think, Jeff?
Yeah, I think that'll solve the problem right there.
Cool. Got a lot of emails here. We're going to roll through these. This one's from Matt. It says, "I was listening to Podnuts Daily episode number 266, and a user, Muhammad, had emailed about having display issues with his HP Mini netbook. I work in the IT department at a healthcare facility in Minnesota, and I had the same issue. The video wouldn't come up, but the computer appeared to be running normally otherwise. My suggestion is first to remove the battery and hold down the power button for at least 30 seconds to essentially release any residual power in the system. This is actually an HP step in troubleshooting, and it is a good step to try in any laptop device. Also, he should try to reseat the RAM. After doing these two steps, I didn't have any more issues with the display not working. Just thought I'd throw my two cents in. Thanks for a great podcast. Keep up the good work. I always learn so much from listening, and I thought I would try to contribute some of my knowledge." That's from Matt. Matt, that's a great email. Thank you very much for the compliments on the show, and even more importantly, for that tip. Because if that worked for you and you're having the same problem as him, then definitely that he should give that a try. Pull out the battery, hold the power, and hold the power button down.
Right.
There you go. Nice one. Thanks, Matt. All right. This is, we got a voicemail. Thank you. This is from William. Let me play this. I love Google Voice because as I'm reading my emails, they're just right in there in the list. Jeff, I don't think you're going to hear this, but I'm going to play it anyway. Here we go. This is from William.
"Hey, Steve, it's William from Jim State Computers. I just had to call in and give you my two cents. I'm definitely with you guys on the BIOS. Unless it does fix up specifics that I'm having a problem with, don't mess with it. And as far as the whole desoldering thing, as far as Dells go, the best thing in the world to get one of those out is a Dremel. You cut the cage in half, and then you unsolder those three leads. You can yank them out, no problem. Same thing for the interior. If you need to, you can cut apart the plastic piece. I've kind of tried every way I could think of. I can't imagine trying to drill it out with a reamer. So yeah, Tim, give a Dremel a try. It's so much easier. Thanks for the show. Bye."
William, you were able, or Jeff, you were
yeah,
able.
I was, I was able to hear that.
How good. My new system. I forgot I had my new system hooked up. It's great. Thank you, William. It was a little low in the beginning, but hopefully you guys got all that. Thank you for that voicemail, William. Let me play William's other voicemail here. Now that the volume's up, I'll be able to hear him a little better. And here is his second voicemail.
Hey, Steve, it's William again from Jim State Computers. Just listening to Podnuts Daily 267. You guys are talking about the screen issue. I believe it's Carlos. One thing I didn't hear you guys mention, I don't think I've ever really heard anybody mention, but kind of an obvious step, maybe everybody's just leaving it out because it is so obvious. Always check your lid switch to make sure it's not gummed up or stuck in the closed position so that you would have no power to your inverter. Just something to think about on that. Thanks. Have a good one.
And that's from William. And another thing I love about Google Voice Message, and I do want to talk about this message. Another thing I love about Google Voice Message is Google tries to send you, they try to translate this from speech to text. And they send you a transcript of the call, and it's always 100% hilarious. Like he said, it might be an inverter problem, and Google says, so you have no cure for your Denver systems. That's the kind of transcription it is. Yeah, that's a good one, William. He was talking about screen problems, and this was a problem that drove me nuts for about a week. I had a customer's computer, and I ordered a new motherboard and everything for him because it was an inverter, or it looked like an inverter problem because you could see the graphics, but they were faint on the screen in the background. And I switched everything out, screens, inverters, motherboards, and everything I could think of. And it turned out that the little switch, when you close the lid of the computer, a little switch that senses it was closed was stuck down. And it basically, when that switch is stuck down, it turns off the light, your light in your screen. So you don't have your screen lit while the lid's down. And that's what was causing the problem. It was a simple little thing. It would have taken me not even one second to go boop and pull it up. And I spent all this time. So William, that's definitely over. We definitely overlooked that. Thank you for that voicemail. Appreciate it. And Google, thank you for the hilarious transcript to go along with that. Anything you want to say on either of them, Jeff?
No, those are great tips.
Cool. All right, let's do a couple more emails here. We got to roll through these. Nick says, hey, Steve, been listening to your current and past shows. What an awesome podcast. I'm in IT for a company in the day, and I started to repair laptops in the evening. I came across an issue that I heard one of your guests talk about. It was when a user tries to connect to a website and can't connect. They were able to connect in the past. Now they can't. I've come across this more than once, and I've not been able to resolve it. Can you suggest the software that can help with this issue? That's from Nick. Wow, it's a broad problem. I mean, several things could have happened between then and now to cause the computer to not be able to access the website. I mean, it could have been infected with spyware. It could have, many, many things could happen. Fortunately, there's a feature in Windows called System Restore, which basically lets you go back in time to before bad things happen in your registry. I love this tool. I've used it tons of times. It doesn't always work, but when it does, you basically went back in time. And I always think that's better than trying to clean up a mess, is to go back in time to before the mess actually occurred. So the software I can suggest to you, Nick, is trying a System Restore. If not, you know, Super Anti Spyware, Malware Bytes, run your antivirus stuff. What do you think, Jeff?
Actually, I think that's it's in your forums. There's that same problem I had was people couldn't connect to Yahoo Mail and different things. So I think it has something to do with that rootkit and doing some redirects. I was able to fix it with out of 5 computers, I was able to fix 2 of them. The other 3 I had to format. And I used, what did I use? I think WinFix or...
somebody talked about it. CombiFix? Was it CombiFix?
CombiFix was one of them. Okay. I used that, and I think that it was combo. It was one of those fix ones. It was a CombiFix, or I think I might even try to run the WinFix, but that stopped the redirects from happening. And again, I was able to make it work on 2 computers, and the other ones, like I said, I think that rootkit was so deep in the Windows system that
Is it that TDR3 rootkit or whatever that's called?
I think so. Okay. I think that was part of the problem, yeah.
Check. Do a search in the forums for rootkit. Good one, Jeff. I missed that. Totally. Do a search in the forums for rootkit and find out what they're saying about that.
I only knew because I was trying to figure out what I was going to do.
Good one. Yeah, that's great. I'm glad you're on the call with me. All right, this is from Raymond. He said, I was unable to reinstall my OS with the disks I made for my Acer laptop. I tried many times with the same result. The keyboard and mouse would stop in the install setup, so I couldn't type in the needed info. I decided to give it one more try, this time with the battery removed, since this battery was not accepting a charge anyway. And to my surprise, the system reinstall went just fine. My best guess was during the install, it might have gotten to the part where it checked the battery condition and kept locking up. So if any of your listeners are having the same problem, they might want to remove the bad battery. This worked for me, and I hope it may help someone else. Thanks, and I will keep listening. Ray, thanks a lot for that. That's a great tip,
yeah.
A great solution. I don't even have to think about that one. That's just, you just stated it right out there for us.
Yeah.
Good one. Appreciate it.
I think I always remove the battery and just and plug the machines in whenever I'm, you know, I would have never thought about that, but yeah, I don't think I ever keep the battery in when I'm, you know, doing a reinstall on a laptop.
Really? I always did. Yeah.
I think because I'm pulling it apart or something, and I'm just, you know, I just leave the battery out.
When I have to take the laptop apart, yeah, I probably have done. I don't know. Maybe I put it back in. Forget. But it's a good tip.
Yeah, that's great.
All right, this is from Fraser. It's a big one. Okay, this will be the last one I read before I'm out of breath. And we're doing Podcast Daily tomorrow too. So if anybody is missing these. Or if I missed anybody's email today, we're going to cover it tomorrow. This is from Fraser. He said, Hi, Steve. I've really been enjoying your Podnuts podcast, all of them. And you have really inspired me to take my passion of fixing computers outside my current scope of fixing friends and family's laptops and starting my own business. As of right now, I've been very much self-taught from online videos and other free resources. I'm currently preparing for my A+ certification. I had a couple questions about what I might need to get started in my computer repair business once I get certified. Until now, I've been pretty much using skills I've learned in my high school communications and computer classes to fix desktops. I haven't even tried laptops unless it was simple stuff like setting up backups, making Windows restore disk, installing software, and basic Windows setups. My first question is, other than the A+, what other certifications do you think would be beneficial to me starting a business fixing people's computers? A++ maybe? Cisco? What other education do you think I'll need? Also, since I've been pretty much an amateur computer tech with no training, is there any tools I might not have thought of that will help me? I've learned a lot of great stuff from your podcast about what to use and how to do things. Other than your laptop repair site and your computer repair business website product, can you think of any other resources that would help me in my business? Books, DVDs, audio resources, software of any kind, or other media forms of resources? I do plan on getting your laptop repair videos. I also plan on using your website tool to build my business website. They seem like great resources, and I can't wait to learn from them. I'm thinking of asking a small local computer repair shop if they will let me sit in and watch them work so that I can learn. I probably won't tell them I'll be their competition, though. And just to learn from guys who have been doing this for a while. My plan is to start to do on-site repair so that I don't need a shop. And then once I get some regular clients, I'll probably invest in opening a brick-and-mortar shop so that I can have some base of operation. And I'm pretty sure I'll be more effective in that. Thanks for all you do and for your inspiration, Fraser. Wow, Fraser. Let's start with certifications. Jeff, do you have any certs?
Nope.
Do you have a computer repair business?
Yes.
Yeah, I don't have any certs. I started my computer repair business. Those are just two examples. Okay, now there's the people that have the certs that have started their businesses, and they think they're great. They say the certs are very beneficial. Certs are hugely beneficial if you're going to be trying to get a job with a company, and you could have that on like your resume and stuff like that, but you're not trying to do that. From my experience, I just went out and used the knowledge I had in Google, and I started fixing computers, and that's where I learned. I didn't take any tests for certs, so that's just what I did. Again, though, you know, Doc Brown, he was on a couple Podnuts Dailies ago. He's a teacher, and he has his students do the A+, or they do it as part of the course or something. And he says it builds their confidence so much that they feel like they could do anything, you know, and they take the next step, and it's much easier for them. So it's probably not a bad thing to do if you have the time and money to get your certs. Go for it. But I don't have any, and I did a business. Jeff didn't, and he does his business. Do you have anything to say on the certs, Jeff?
I was just going to say, you know, as far as like, you know, the certs and stuff, and that's fine. Like you said, if you got time and everything, but, you know, as far as the business, just do it.
Yeah.
Just go out there and just get started. And, you know what, you're gonna make mistakes, and that's, you know, that's how you learn.
Yep.
You know, so that, I think that's the, I like what you said before, in previous podcasts, you talked about, you know, basically trial by fire. You know, when you're under the gun and you're going, oh, I really got to fix this so I can get out of here and move on to the next one, you'll figure things out. And if you're smart enough to already work on computers, you've already got what it takes.
Yeah.
Just go out there and just, you know, just do it.
Exactly. You're not going to know what you're going to run into till you run into it. And that the only way to run into it is to do it. And like I said, I really believe it. If you want to really learn how to do something, start a business doing it, because you will do it. You will learn faster than you ever learned in your life from the pure necessity of having to get it done. So exactly what Jeff said.
Yep.
Okay. Also, any tools besides the stuff? Well, first of all, a lot of the stuff Jeff mentioned in this show, you can definitely use Fraser. I mean, he laid a lot of stuff out there. Other than that, is there any books, DVD, audio resources? You know, there is Scott Mueller's Upgrading and Repairing PCs. It's like the Bible of fixing computers. Check that out. I mean, you can get that at Barnes & Noble, Borders, yeah. any of those, Amazon, or podnuts.com/Amazon. And that's a great read. I mean, you just learn everything about everything in computers with that thing. Go to technibble.com, see what the guys over there are saying. Read Bryce's posts, join the forums. Another great tool is Podnuts Forums, you know. If you have questions, go to the Podnuts Lounge and ask questions there. I mean, between these two sites, those are great resources for you right there. Any books or DVDs or audio stuff that he should listen to, Jeff, or read?
No, the Scott Mueller one is great. I got that book when I first started the business, and it kind of, you know what, it helped with my mindset more than anything else. So,
yeah.
You know, kind of understanding things a little bit better at a, you know, how things work. You know, I have a basic understanding, but it just kind of made it a little more solid. And I got that now.
Yeah.
You know, so no, that's a great resource.
And you could Google lots of stuff, but then you have to sift through the Google search results. If you know, if you want to go to a place where you know the correct answer is there for you, that book is awesome. It's because you know it's solid, good information. You can get it, and it's right there. So other than that, Fraser. Google is your huge friend. It's your best friend right now. Google things you don't understand. If you run into errors, just Google the errors.
Yep.
As far as sitting in with a computer repair shop, I don't like when some people have asked to do that with me. I don't like when people come in and just sit there and watch. I mean, if you're going to come in, I would go in maybe and apprentice under them and help and learn, but don't go and say, can I watch you guys? They're going to say no. I mean, they are. But unless you can show them that you're going to offer some kind of benefit to them or help them in some way and do it for free would be great, then they might say, oh, yeah, come in every day you want, and they'll give you stuff to do, and you'll learn that way.
Exactly. I agree.
Don't be too sneaky, though, about hiding that you're going to be their competition. If you feel like you're going to, it's unethical, then just don't do it, because that's going to come back and haunt you. Let's see. As far as going on site to start off, there you go. You're good to go. Good luck to you, Fraser. Sounds like you know what you're doing there.
You know, and I think the other thing too is there's a lot of we all look at this as competition. I don't really look at it as a lot of competition. There's a lot of people that have computers that need to be fixed, and I don't care if your shop is a 5-man shop or a 1-man shop or a 20-man shop. You can only fix so many computers in a day, a week, a month. So there's enough business to go around with, people, breaking their computers that I don't think you really have to worry about it being so competitive, you know?
I agree. Right now, there's so much out there. There's so much. I mean, there's so many computer shops around me in a 5-minute radius. I hit about 5 already in just this new area. I was checking it out. And a lot of them specialize in laptops. So there's definitely, demand is definitely there nowadays. So good point, Jeff. There's tons of computers out there. Or the supply. Wait, supply? No, whatever. There's lots of computers out there to fix.
Exactly.
I just confused myself. Okay. All right. Well, that's going to be it for this episode of Podnuts Daily. Check out Jeff's site if you want to see a perfect tech website or tech site builder site. Check out Jeff's site. He's got a great logo. He's got a picture of him fixing a computer. Nice color scheme. It all goes together nice. The fonts are the perfect size. He did a real good job. Jeff, thanks very much for being on the show and hitting us with all that information.
Well, thanks for having me on. I really appreciate it. And I appreciate, you know, all the stuff you're doing. And I just want to say that everybody that, you know, is, I've heard people feel intimidated about coming on here. And it's just, you know what? If you've got something to share, and everybody really has something to share, you know, if you're fixing computers, you have something to share. Get on here and support Steve and support the community and really share. Because I'll tell you what, it doesn't matter how little you think you know. I learn something from every podcast, one little tidbit that helps me or saves me time. And it is well worth my time in listening, you know, to an hour and 15 minute show. So I really appreciate the opportunity to come on here and share. And I just encourage others to, you know, let's build this community up and come out here and support Steve and everybody else.
Definitely. Thank you for saying that. And you're absolutely right. We love, this is Jeff's first time on. We love having new guests on. Even if you're saying something you might be repeating somebody else say, look, maybe somebody didn't even listen to that episode, so they need to hear that for the first time. Don't even worry. It's a lot of fun. And you're right. Everybody does have something to contribute. We know you have stuff. We know you have stuff out there that you are keeping to yourself because you're afraid to come on the show. So if you want to sign up, go to podnuts.com/guests. Just fill in your name and you're in. It's just that simple. If you want to leave us a voicemail, here's a way to ease into it. Send us a voicemail, 7076-PODNUT. Just dial that on a regular phone or however you call things these days. And leave us a voicemail. Or if you want to send an email, just send us an email at mail@podnuts.com. All right, that's going to be it for today's episode of Podnuts Daily. See you all next time. Music for Podnuts Daily has been provided by Evan King at purevolume.com/EvanKing.